Hi, I'm Carrie Butler, and you're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. I have a special offer for my listeners. You can get my new course at carriebutlercoach.com/Broadway Podcast.
Once I played a Penny who just couldn't stop the beat. Yes, with roller skates on her feet. Was just recently deceased. A real cool mom, musical version of Tina Fey. Tina Fey, now come with me and fly. I am your host, Miss Carrie Butler. Together, you and I are brave.
Welcome back to Breaking Broadway. Today, we have Jason Stiers, who has cast so many shows, A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, The Lion King, Anastasia, Fiddler on the Roof, West Side Story, 15 productions of encores from Merrily We Roll Along, starring Lin-Manuel Miranda, to Cabin in the Sky. In addition to casting all of those shows, Jason is also the creative director of The Casting Collaborative, and he's going to tell us more about that. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Carrie. I'm so happy to be here.
So why don't you just tell us a little bit about how you became a casting director? What, as a kid, did you know about casting directors? Did you want to be a performer?
It's funny. Actually, I did not grow up around the arts like extensively at all. Actually, I always call it nerd school, where math, science, those sorts of things were the most important things. And we were doing, you know, math competitions, science fairs, social studies fairs. Those were the most important things to me as a kid. But we did have a lot of exposure. I grew up in Montgomery, Alabama, Alabama Shakespeare Festival is. Yeah. So we went to shows, but I didn't realize it was, I thought people were just doing that for fun. You know, like I didn't get that it was like there was an industry.
You didn't know it was
that.
A job. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I grew up being somewhat exposed to that, but it wasn't until actually my life actually changed completely around eighth grade, which is not, it's kind of weird to say, but I got kicked out of school for, basically trying to organize a walkout regarding homework. It was a whole thing.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was a whole thing. I got kicked out, but they luckily let me back into the program after a lot of petitioning. And at that point, everyone's schedule had already solidified, right? So like there was only one period left that I needed to fill, and that was fourth period. I remember fourth period. Fourth period was open, and they were like, look, the only arts elective that you can take that's available is they called it drama, theater. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be in there with like seventh graders. I'm way too cool for this. I was like, whatever, I'll do it. So I did it. And it literally, that actually changed the trajectory of my life. At that point, I went to a performing arts high school after that. And through that, I did musical theater. By the second year, I was also dancing because the dance magnet professor and person oversaw that, he was like, how long have you been dancing? And I was like, like now? He was like, okay. So he snatched me up and kind of like pulled me into the whole thing. And so I was dancing and doing musical theater stuff and learning as much as I could because I didn't grow up watching these things and seeing these things. And then it was during that it was actually my senior year in high school that I became aware of not necessarily what they did, but of what a casting director, that they existed. It was the wild party, the Lacusa wild party.
Yeah.
And so I flipped that over and I saw that there was like a casting director listed. I was like, what does that mean? And so luckily I had a mentor, Randy Foster, shout out to him. He's still doing so much work in the arts world in Alabama. He sat me down and he's like, this is what it is. And this is how it works. And, you know, obviously, you know, there's a lot more to it than what I'm telling you, but this is what that job is. And it was actually, the Heidi Griffith down at the Public and Jordan Thaler. So they were the ones that were listed. So I was like, okay. So they were the first people that I associated with what casting director meant is was.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's kind of like how it happened. And then went to college in the middle of nowhere, Alabama, Montevallo. And we have competitive musicals as our homecoming tradition. And I just loved the audition process, and I didn't care about booking the job. So I think primed to kind of deal with that.
That is so cool. So then you came to New York and just started working? How did you start doing it?
Again, pretty non-traditional. I stayed out of the business for a year and maybe almost 2 years. I worked for Aveda.
Aveda.
Yeah, I worked for them and you know, did some, you know, educational stuff for them and some programming stuff for them. And I knew I was going to want to get into casting, but I knew I was going to have to save up money in order to take an internship, which would inevitably be unpaid, because we're now hitting like the 2007, 2008, like lovely recession where people were, you know, working for free a lot. Right. And so we did that, and I took an internship right after that, and I just kept asking for more and more, and I just kept asking because there were many people that did not want me around because I was eager, you know, and I wanted, and I was also 25. I wasn't 21, right? So I was like, I knew I wanted to do this. And I was like, this is the career path that I've been wanting to do. So I was like, okay, look, I'm competent, I'm smart, I'm fast, you know, like give me things to do. And that's I met now one of my business partners, Bess Pfeiffer. She's the casting director for Severance on Apple TV.
I love that show.
Yeah, so good. And she became a mentor for me, and she, you know, took me under her wing and taught me what she did. And then it just kind of fell out from there, and a lot of connections as far as like making sure I stayed in contact with other interns and connecting with them. So when a job actually opened up at Bender Casting, a former intern friend of mine had been there, and he reached out and was like, hey, are you interested in interviewing? And I was like, absolutely. So, you know, very circuitous. I think in this business, I'm sure you can attest to this too. You know, it's the line that we think we're going to go on, the direct path that you're like, well, that is the answer. It's rarely that. So.
Right. And just goes to show how important community is, how, you know, even the people that you worked alongside with, the other interns, ended up helping you get jobs.
100%. The community is the thing, especially in this industry where, you know, a lot of the stuff isn't publicly posted, especially on our side of the business. You know, that stuff wasn't openly publicly posted. It's not shared broadly. It's not like, you know, sometimes there will be something posted on Playbill or Backstage or things like that. But like the people that are getting, sort of like how the audition process goes, right? Sometimes where, you know, it's just like who we know is going to come in and just nail it, we're going to give priority to those people. So that's, you know, it is a little bit, it's a, how our industry actually approaches hiring, for better or for worse, is not too dissimilar to the casting process, which is, you know, it always made it very interesting. And I loved that kind of like excitement of a little bit of competition, but like healthy, healthy competition. Yes. And like acknowledging, like, you know, there's a little bit, there's always going to be that element there. And I enjoy that aspect.
So segueing to the casting process and those people who, you know, are going to do great auditions, like what makes them stand out? What makes you trust them and know that?
I think, you know, there is a certain element of it's really less about the thing itself, because ultimately my job is to kind of help somebody understand the material and the world that is being created. Because it could be the same show here, if you're doing it, I could be casting five different productions of the exact same show title. But every director may have a different vision.
That is such a great point.
And so, you've been in this industry long enough to know that, like, okay, even, you know, a version of, you know, like, let's say Little Shop, right? You know, like your version of Little Shop is going to have been very different from every subsequent version and every previous version. And that's
right.
Our job is to like know what the director's looking for and know how to translate that over to the performers, the actors, the dancers, whoever's coming through the door. So that way they understand kind of how to approach the material in addition to how they, in addition to the their own views on it. We're trying to synthesize
all of that.
So
everybody, everybody, listen, the casting directors are there to help you.
Yeah.
And when they give you notes, it might not be how you think it should be because they have that inside information.
Right. It's not to say like, oh, this is bad or wrong. It's more about like, I'm just trying to get you the job. Like then, then you can get in the room and you can really flesh out the art and the feels and the vibes and the, you know, and challenging. Cause as you already have attested to, like, I don't mind challenging a system. I think that it is important. I think it's important, you know? And that's what art is, you know, art comes from challenging preconceived notions. But in order to the audition room for, in my opinion, is not necessarily the place to do that. You can, but just don't be surprised when the answer is constantly no, right? I think get the job, get into the room, get into the position, and then start figuring out how you can really affect change once you're inside of it. But that's hard. That's hard on the heart. But
do you see any people like come in and make certain mistakes that you're like, oh, I wish they didn't do that, you know, or you're like, oh, you're hurting yourself?
I think it's actually tied to what we were just talking about. I think getting overly precious and getting overly connected to
the way you're doing it.
Yeah. And it's
your choices.
Yeah. Your choices. I mean, your choices are important. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I think what's really exciting is, you know, when people do come in, they're like, let's find where those intersect and maybe where those conflict and how we can play with those. The audition room can be a really enjoyable experience if you're willing to come in with that notion. Hanging on to that, and it's, I mean, lack of preparation.
That's
a
good one.
It's trite, I know, to say, but like, it's true. If you're the better prepared you are, I always compare it to, you know, in the restaurant industry, like in the world of fancy chefs, you know, the concept of mise en place, where every single day you come in, you have everything, you have the knife that's been cleaned properly, you have this, and things are in the same place. So that way you can grab things, muscle memory can kick in. And I think that you kind of have to have that with material. I think you should have a certain level of mise en place with your material and your acting chops. So that way you can have all of this stuff kind of sitting, or like, obviously nothing physically is going to be sitting around you, but you know, like in your kind of mind brain, you have all these things that are just sitting around easy for you to grab or put back and be like, you know, that's not working. Put it back. That's fine.
Right.
Next
right.
thing, you know, let me grab this like garlic press that actually is normally used for garlic, but let's try it out for this like cherry tomato. I don't know if it's going to be right. Ooh, that's not working.
Right. So it's not even about the actual preparation, like memorizing lines, which is super important, but the preparation before you get that audition, like the training and all of those different ways that you can then pull from those tools for, so you're prepared for the audition when it comes up.
Exactly. The knife has to be sharp. You know what I mean? The knife has to be sharp. If you grab a dull knife, you're going to struggle for the rest of the time. So you need to keep it, like, you need to care for it. Or you need to be very creative and like, I know the knife is dull today. And that's acceptable. That is acceptable. Mm-hmm. The knife is dull today. Oh, I messed up because life happens. But you know what? I'm going to get creative about how I'm going to use this tool over here. And maybe it's not going to be exactly what I had intended. And that is where the preciousness has to be let go of. Like, it's not exactly, and I'm that person. I'm like, I want the plan to go as we planned.
Right.
You got to let go of that to some extent when you come into the audition room, in my opinion.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary, and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that With brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a super technical question that is very controversial. What audition songs do you love and not like?
I've never met one that I don't love. And it's all about context. You know, communication in general is all about context. So the question for me is always, is this the right thing for this right moment in this right, like going in for this, this position, this role in this show? Because I think that I've heard so many other people in this industry be like, I try never to use never and never and, you know, never to use always. They're dangerous words in the sense of in a creative field, because I've seen such, there's a great, I still think about this audition, and it was just an audition for Spamalot at Tuts in 2014, 13 maybe. Mm-hmm. And a now friend, Andrew Hodge, he's a wonderful actor, dancer. He does it all, and a hilarious human being. He came in with his resume he had redone to look like, you know, again, context of time, 2013. He had redone his resume to look like a Facebook profile. And he sang the theme song to David the Gnome, the animated. And in every other situation, you'd be like, this is ridiculous. What is happening? Are you crazy? But for Spamalot, it was immediate. Love he was it. Immediately hired. Immediately.
Oh, wow.
It's and literally the artistic director, great, done. He's in. It was no question whatsoever. So
also because you know he's a smart actor. Just by doing all of those things, you know he's putting his thought out there and he's on the same page as you all.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was taking a risk, but he was taking a calculated risk. You know, right. I think he was very smart about that. He understood would I bring this in for he actually did a few years of our White Christmas tour. He would have never done that for White Christmas because that's not the world, right? Mm-hmm. But for Spamalot, it makes sense. We need a weird, you know, wonderful, hilarious human being who doesn't take himself too seriously. So,
do you have any other really good audition stories from through the years?
Oh, God, there's so many. There's so many. I mean, I always get kind of misty eyed about any of the times that we get to talk about my kids, as I call them, even though none of them are kids anymore. They're all voting and, you know, voting adults. Oh, God, it's terrifying. But, you know, a lot of my time that I spent with Lion King and the kids casting of that process, you know, I think that thinking back to even being in a room full of, you know, at the time I would see 40 to 50 kids at one time, teach them all of Just Can't Wait. Well, a section of Just Can't Wait to Be King. And this one specifically was at the Apollo. So epic space to be in, humbling space to be in, and going through this material and teaching them and kind of breaking it all down like you would do with any song, right? We're breaking down the beats. We're talking about vocabulary. We're like, what does this mean? Well, you know, and just
you did all that with 50 kids at one time?
At one time, yeah.
Wow.
And then the next group of 50 would come in. And then the next group of 50 would come in. And I did that for, you know, and it was so fulfilling. And it was so much fun. And you could literally tell, immediately when folks just got it. When young people got it. Because it just clicked. And they were okay just being themselves and kind of this, existing, right? Yeah. Versus trying to please, the kids that did it, and that's where I met people Kayla McLaughlin, who's now on Stranger Things and obviously a bunch of other things. You know, that's where I met Shahadi Wright Joseph. That's where I met Kylie Kerr. All of these people that I met throughout that now have illustrious careers, beautiful careers on film, television, you know, still on stage doing all these wonderful things. Lexi Underwood, I met in D.C. You know, Jahi Winston, I met in Atlanta. He just wanted to be a dancer. He was like, I don't really, he didn't even really care. He obviously cared about performing and he was there to do it, but he wasn't trying to get the thing.
Yeah.
And I think
that's also a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you get, when you try to hold on to something like that too tightly, that's, you know, it's really, really hard to kind of do and be flexible and play around. and that there should always be a sense of play. And I think young people have such a easier access to that than adults, you know, because there's a lot of other things that are going through adult brains of like rent and you know, right, maybe taking care of kids and like, you know, like all of these other things that go into the equation that, you know, young people get to play. So I think tapping into that even as an adult or as you age, having that kind of, you know, that inner child quality is so beautiful. But like, those are the things that I think I hold the dearest, is like getting to meet these kids when they were kids, these humans now, when they were kids, and seeing how they even just approached life. Not just like, not just how they approach the material. Like, we talk about everything. I'm like, I remember Jahi just talking about how he wanted to dance. And like, and I was like, show me some moves. Like, let's do this. Like, hanging out and just getting to know you. He was like, kid's a star. Like, done. Like, it was just
evident. And this was just an open call that you found all those kids on?
Yeah. Between open calls and like, we of course did like, you know, agent appointments. But like, so often our kids came, for Lion King especially, came out of open calls.
Speaking of open calls, let's bring on my niece, who I like to call the queen of the open calls, Margot Plum. I'm not going on open calls, so I thought I should have somebody on who's going on them and let us know what it's like, how it's changed since the pandemic.
Things are pretty much back to the way they were pre-pandemic. The thing that has changed is, I will say, if you get an agent appointment, that first round is virtual pretty consistently.
Like that.
Yeah. I mean, I like it a lot too because it saves you time and everything. But with EPAs and ECCs, I will say since the pandemic, there have been a lot more equity members joining because they changed the rules a little bit. So like last week, I signed up for an EPA. And what happens is a week before the audition at 11:45, you sit on your phone or on your computer and you hit refresh until 11:45. And then you quickly hit sign up. And then you're pushed into a 15-minute waiting period. And then at 12 o'clock, you go into a queue. And you can see what number you are in the queue. Yeah, I know. It's a little crazy.
That's like getting Taylor Swift tickets.
Yes, pretty much exactly. Last week, when I was pushing the queue, I saw that I was number 300. Oh. And then suddenly... it kind of shut down. And I was like, oh no, what's going on? And I had to rejoin everything. And I think the website crashed because then I was suddenly number 65 and I got an appointment.
Oh,
and
that's good.
It was good for me, but I felt bad for, you know, actual number 65 who might have been 300 then. So there are just a lot of equity members on the site during the signups, and I think their server was inundated.
For new actors coming to New York, how do they find those first auditions?
Yeah, so you probably won't be equity, and you probably can't see them through the equity website. So you're going to want to go to Playbill or Broadway World. Playbill, I like their interface more. It's definitely clearer on their job section. Broadway World, you can sign up to get, I think, their daily emails. Sometimes they don't come daily because there aren't new auditions, but they will send you an email in the middle of the night telling you all the new calls that are up, and you can see where to go.
Do they have to go line up at 5 a.m? Is it the same as where they can sign up?
So for true open calls, like the non-union, so to be honest, I'm really nervous for all the non-union and EMC people this year because, yes, because there's this Instagram account called The Hustle NYC. Highly recommend following them. They daily will tell you all the auditions that are happening that day and then give you live updates. And it's really great. But what I'm seeing a lot on there is that they're releasing non-union and they're telling people to come back after lunch, or they are telling people just to leave. Sometimes they're accepting drop-offs, sometimes they're not. And then what's also happening with the non-union lists right now, people are starting non-union lists on the door of Pearl or Ripley or wherever the audition is happening at like 12 a.m. the day before.
Whoa.
Yes. Which, when I was standing in line, I would have been so upset if I showed up at 5 in the morning knowing that somebody at 12 started this list with like 10 of their friends and they're not standing in line with me. So what happens with those calls is you go to the door, you put your name on the list, but then you stand in person, like in the freezing cold. It's not healthy. We shouldn't be doing this. Somebody is going there, putting a piece of paper up, taping it to the door, saying like unofficial list for non-union for Rev Theater. They're doing their audition tomorrow. And they're signing up 10 people or whatever. Then they're coming back when the monitor is there inside the audition holding room and transferring the list to the equity papers and everything. Sometimes the unofficial lists are being taken, sometimes they're not. I've been in the room and seen them be like, we're not taking the unofficial list. You need to come stand in line right now and sign up.
Okay, so I'm confused. The actual list is started by random people who want to audition, or is it started by...
So like, let's take the Little Women non-union call. That was a particularly crazy call. There's somebody on Instagram, or not Instagram, on TikTok. Her name's Jessie Lynn. She interviewed people in line.
Ow.
Yes. People in line got there at like 2 a.m. were standing outside of Pearl waiting for this call. It might be an exaggeration, but it was very early. It was at least 4. Standing in line, like layered clothes. Like you're not gonna sing well if you're standing in line that early. That call also had audition appointments. So, you know, who knows if they're looking at these open calls anyway? Like I sometimes feel that going to the EPAs and ECCs, I don't know if they're going. The last Wicked call I went to was an insane ECC. I mean, so at ECCs, ECCs are different than EPAs. ECCs, you can sign up online, but you don't really know who's going to show up or not because equity members do not get penalized if they don't show up. So I heard recently in a class that I took with Kevin Mitzinger of Tara Rubin that 30% of equity members are not showing up, which is good for the non-union ECC EMC people for these ECCs. But for that Wicked call, it was particularly crazy. I mean, room was packed. There were two monitors. One monitor was yelling names. They yell your name 3 times. And then another person was echoing the name down the hall because the hallway was packed. This was definitely a fire hazard. People were missing their names because they couldn't hear it to get back to the room. Yeah. And they cut us down to 8 bars. Oh, I was in the first group.
So
first
wow,
group.
You.
Well, I do, for the ECCs, I do the same thing as the EPAs. For ECCs, you can sign up at 8:45 in the morning. So I sit there and I try and get in the first 20. I'm normally in the first 20. So I'm normally seen in the first group. I've figured out that I do better in the first groups for the open calls because then I didn't ruminate on it all day. Yeah. I just got it over with.
And so what time... So you did the thing at 8. Talk us through the time period. You did the thing at like 8:45. That's when you up?
For the ECCs, 8:45 a week before, you can sign up.
Oh, before. Okay, so that's when you signed up. Then when was your audition?
For ECCs, you have to show up. Sometimes the calls are at 9, some are at 9:30, some are at 10 for ECCs. And they sit there and they call everybody's name.
So what time did you get there?
I normally get there like a half an hour before. Because I think they start calling names a half an hour before.
So this is like later after you schedule the appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And you get there at like 9:30.
Yeah. And the equity monitor will call all the names. And then if you're there, you say, I'm here. And you're given a little card.
Okay. And so then how long after 9:30 until you actually went in and sang?
Well, because I try and get a pretty early number, I'm normally in the first or second group. So I'll be seen in the first hour.
That is actually much better than waiting at 5 a.m. So for you, being equity was definitely worth it.
It was definitely worth it.
Just even for the less time at auditions.
Yeah.
Come back next week to check out more of our story with Jason Stiers.
Thank you so much for listening. If you would like me to come to your school or theater group and give a masterclass or a talk back, please reach out at carriebutlercoach.com. If you like this podcast, subscribe and leave a rating. And in the comments, let me know what topics you want me to cover. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.